Welcome to Madrid en Inglés, Madrid in English, a tour, a colorful educational tour of our capital, Madrid, and of our province, La Comunidad de Madrid. Learn English with me, with Richard Vaughn, using Madrid as our base of operations. Yeah, let's go. Hello and welcome. Hello again. How are you today? Welcome to a new edition of Madrid en Inglés, Madrid in English. Welcome. My name is Richard Vaughn, Richard Vaughan, como dicen aquí, y como digo yo aquí. I use the name Vaughan. When I came to Spain for the first time in 1972, people had trouble understanding my name and pronouncing my name, because my name at that time was Rick, which is a nickname of Richard. My name was Rick Vaughn, and those are two monosyllables, Rick Vaughn. And people had trouble pronouncing it here. Say Rick, Rick, instead of Rick, and Bon, Bon, instead of Vaughn. So I used my birth name, Richard, my given name, Richard, and I changed the pronunciation of my last name from Vaughn to Vaughan. So instead of two syllables, Rick Vaughn, I became Richard Vaughan, Richard Vaughan. And so I changed my name from two syllables to four. And it's necessary to do this many times. For example, Colgate Palmolive. They say in Spain, they say Colgate Palmolive. And so, otherwise, Colgate, because if they say Colgate, probably they will sell less toothpaste. Venderán menos pasta de dientes, right? If they say Colgate, so they say Colgate, and I say Vaughan. But in any case, my name is Richard Vaughan. I'm an English teacher. I'm from the United States. I'm from the state of Texas. I spent my first 9 years living in Houston, Texas. I spent my second 9 years living in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Oklahoma is located directly north of Texas, crossing the Red River, Rio Rojo de John Wayne. Who was the other actor? Montgomery Clift. And then at the age of 18, I returned to Texas for 2 years in Dallas, at a university in Dallas. And then in 1972, I came to Spain for a third year, an academic year abroad, similar to the concept of hacer un Erasmus. And so I came to Madrid for one year, one academic year. And then I returned to Texas, but this time not to Dallas nor to Houston, but to the capital, Austin, to the University of Texas, and there I finished my higher education. I finished my studies. So here I am. And then I came back to Spain in 1974 with $300 in my pocket, and the rest is history. So, and the name Vaughan, or Vaughan, is Welsh. Es un apellido galés. It's a Welsh. Although, is really, there are three branches of Vaughan in Wales and one branch in Ireland. Es una rama irlandesa. Cuatro, tres ramas galesas de Vaughan, or Vaughan, y una rama irlandesa. And I'm from the Welsh, I think. I haven't performed a study or conducted a DNA study, un estudio de ADN, a DNA study of my ancestors and my background. But my los cuatro apellidos, my four surnames or last names, are Vaughan Adams Campbell Crosby, and Vaughan Vaughan is Welsh. My mother's surname is Adams, and that's English. My paternal No, my paternal grandmother's name is Campbell, 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 and that is Scottish. And my maternal grandmother's surname is Crosby, like Bing Crosby, and that's Irish. So I am basically from the four different countries that make up the United Kingdom: Wales, England, Scotland, and Northern Ireland, or the Irish Republic, which is not part of the United Kingdom, of course, Ayr, or the Irish Republic. But in any case, but here I am as an English teacher, and my job is to teach English indirectly here on the Madrid. And it's a pleasure to be here. It's always a pleasure, every Sunday morning. Every Sunday morning, and I talk about Madrid. But really, I use Madrid as a setting, as a backdrop for, or background, Sithimas backdrop, a backdrop for my life story, because my life story is intimately connected to the city of Madrid and to the community, the province of Madrid. 51 years, 52 years, really, if we count that study year, my third year of the university. So I'm more connected to Madrid than to Houston or to Dallas or to Austin or to Tulsa, Oklahoma. And I like Madrid. Madrid is a very interesting, a very good city. It's a very popular city now. It's in fashion. Madrid is in fashion. For better or for worse, Madrid está de moda. For better or for worse, para mejor o para peor, decimos en inglés, para bien o para mal, because it attracts a lot of tourism, which is good. Tourism brings revenue, it brings money. It brings money from outside of Spain, usually. So Madrid doesn't need to generate that money. It falls from the heavens. When people come to Madrid from Germany, Italy, France, the United States, Canada, Brazil, the UK, they bring in money and they leave money in Madrid, in the hotels, in the restaurants, in the shops. And that money has arrived free. Of course, Madrid needs an infrastructure. Madrid needs to invest in an infrastructure to accommodate these tourists, good hotels, good restaurants, interesting shops, etc. But nevertheless, tourism is extremely important for the community of Madrid, but more especially for Spain, because most of the tourism travels to the coast or to the islands, to the Balearic Islands, to the Canary Islands, or to the Costa del Sol in the south, or to the Costa Blanca in the east, or in the Costa Brava in the northeast, or in the Costa, me falta un nombre. And then, of course, the Camino de Santiago attracts a lot of people, the Way of Santiago, etc., etc. But here I want to focus 80% of my radio program every week on Madrid, and using my life. And at the end of last week, if you listened to my program last week, I was explaining my life in the autumn of 1976, the fall, otoño, the fall of 1976, and the winter of 1976-77. What was I doing at that time? I was finishing my work in a company called Intercom, whose offices were located on the Calle Mayor, very near the Puerta del Sol, and also equidistant between the Plaza Mayor and the Puerta del Sol. Interesting place in Madrid. And there I was the manager of the teachers, the teacher manager, and translation manager, and I was busy translating a lot of information for the launching of the Ford Fiesta. the Ford Fiesta was launched in October 1976. And during 1976, I was doing many things. And one of the most important things I was doing was translating the accounting manuals, the spare parts manuals, the dealer manuals, the everything for Ford Motor Company, from English to Spanish and many times from Spanish to English. So I was learning very quickly a crash course, a fast track to learning to write in Spanish. It was a very good experience for me, but it was a lot of work. And in September of 1976, I began teaching personally. In addition to managing teachers and translations, I began personally teaching in John Deere Iberica, which is a tractor company located in Getafe, along the Toledo Highway. And as I told you last week, the Toledo Highway at that time, in 1976, was a two-lane road, one lane going out and one lane coming in. And every morning, I took the John Deere bus from Cibeles. I went by underground, by metro, to Metro Banco de España. Yes, from Ventura Rodriguez. And I caught the John Deere bus at 7:30. And we went out over the Escalestrix in the Plaza de Atocha, in Atocha Square. And then we crossed the river. We passed through La Plaza Elíptica, which today is called Fernández Ladreda. And then we continued out, and we passed Stand Electrica on the left. We passed Aristrain, which is a fundición de acero, a steel foundry. And then we passed El Bercial on the right, and other companies, Kelvinator on the left, which is a white line, Línea Blanca, refrigerators, freezers, stoves, dishwashers, washing machines. And then finally John Deere. And it was always in the dark. And when we reached Aristrain, it smelled like sulfur. Olía todo a azufre, o parecido. And so it was a very strong impact on me and on my teachers when I started subcontracting teachers to help me in John Deere. During 1977, the impact it made on these people, wow. Because it's a very industrial area. And in the, arriving early in the morning, still in the dark. And because Spain, half of the year is 1 hour ahead of the sun. And the other half of the year is 2 hours ahead of the sun. Francisco Franco, during the Franco regime, aligned Spain with Germany and Austria and Italy on the timetable, on the time, what you call el uso horario. And so Spain, half the year, during the late spring, summer, and early fall, is 1 hour ahead, por delante de, 1 hour ahead of the sun. And during the late fall, winter, and early spring, Spain is 2 hours ahead of the sun. And because of this, the sun comes up very late in Spain compared to other countries. And so at least half of the year, or maybe three-quarters of the year, between 7:30 and 8 in the morning, it's still dark. It's still dark outside. And when you take a bus, from the center of Madrid to Getafe in the dark on a working day with thousands of cars coming in to Madrid from Getafe, Leganés, Fuenlabrada, or Parla, or Illescas even, or Toledo, and Vargas, and they're coming in bumper to bumper. We say bumper to bumper. En tráfico era para choque, which means una fila, Interminable was an endless. Endless is interminable, is endless. End is el fin. Endless is an endless chain of cars coming in. Going out, less, because more people were coming into Madrid than traveling south from Madrid to Getafe or Leganés or Parla. And that was my introduction to Madrid Sur, to the south of Madrid. And for the next 20 years, at least, yeah, for the next 20 years, I went to the south of Madrid every day, almost every day. But maybe in the last 5 years, maybe two or three times a week. But I became an expert on the development and the improvements by the different community Madrid, the different governments of the province of Madrid on improving the communications and improving the transportation and in general improving the south of Madrid. The south of Madrid has improved tremendously since 1976 when I first went to Getafe in 1976 to visit the different areas in Villa Verde Bajo, Villa Verde Alto, in Ciudad de Los Ángeles, in Getafe, Leganés, Zarce Quemada, Griñón, and in Parla. I'm very familiar with that area, with those areas. Also Leganés, Alcorcón. And the connections have improved 500%. And the quality, the material quality of life in those areas has improved 500% since 1976. It's impressive to go there now in the ease of moving from point A to point B. But I started going, and in, as I said, during the Christmas break of 1976 to 1977, I made an agreement with John Deere to become their in-house supplier of English training, because John Deere, in spite of the fact that it was and is in a subsidiary of Deere and Company, the worldwide multinational corporation, surprisingly, very, very few people in 1976 spoke English well in John Deere. John Deere Iberica and John Deere Spain. Very, very few, maybe four or five people only. And John Deere Iberica at that time had about 1,700 people. And they produced tractors and engines. And they had about 80 or 90 or maybe 100 dealerships around Spain. So it was a big operation. And I became a key person in the organization because I was, in essence, endowing the company with a second language. My objective was to convert this company in Getafe from a monolingual company to a bilingual company. And I did it. It took me 2 years to achieve 70%. And it took another 20 years to complete the task to 100%. But the first 70%, which was the most essential, between 1977 and 1979. This period was also very, very important in Spain because it was the famous transition, the political transition. Francisco Franco died in November 1975. Carlos Arias Navarro was the prime minister under the new king from November 1975 to July 1976. And then Adolfo Suárez was appointed by the king to take over the job of prime minister or president of the government in 1976, and in December 1976 was the referendum para la reforma política, for political reform, and it was passed, I think, with about 96 or 97% of the national vote, and that was the beginning. The transition really began at that point. because the Spanish people, through their vote on the referendum, gave the government the go-ahead or the mandate to initiate the transition. So the transition began, let's say, in truly began, legitimized on January 1st, 1977. And that's where I am in my story. But I'm going to take a short break. I'll be right back.
El mejor restaurante que puedas imaginar es tu casa. Y para que así sea, el Asador Villaranda es tu fiel aliado. Asados en horno de leña al estilo segoviano. Llévatelo a casa y guarda nuestro secreto.
Porque los toros son cultura, son arte, son espectáculo.
Los domingos de 11 a 12 de la noche, El Toril con Julio Martínez, en Onda Madrid.
Nuevo concesionario Fiat en la zona norte de Madrid. Estamos en Tres Cantos, Avenida de los Artesanos 22. Les esperamos. Grupo Álvaro Villacañas.
101.3 y 106 FM. Onda Madrid.
Hello and welcome back. All right, we're back for our second segment, let's say, of today's Sunday. Well, this is the third Sunday of the year, of the new year of 2025. Welcome back. And if you're just joining me, this is Madrid en Inglés. My name is Richard Vaughn. I'm an English teacher. And my job is to teach English, but with Onda Madrid, I'm teaching English indirectly. Because my subject is Madrid. But my subject really is my life in Madrid. But to explain my life, I have to describe Madrid and talk at length about Madrid. At length. Length is longitud. Length. Anchura, width. Length, 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 length. Fijaos cómo se pronuncia. Length. Como si fuera una KZ al final, no GHTH. But it's KZ. Length, length is longitud. But at length, o sea, literalmente a longitud, ¿qué significa eso? To talk at length es hablar detenidamente. Voy a hablar a longitud de este tema. O sea, voy a hablar detenidamente. I'm going to speak or talk at length about Madrid because my life is intimately related to Madrid. I've been living here desde el siglo XIII, parece, since the 13th century, maybe when it was Madrid. All right, who knows? But no. So 1977, yes, sir, January 1st, 1977 was perhaps, we could call, say officially, is the beginning of the transition. After the referendum for democratic reform, in December 1976, and on February 1st, 1977, I began teaching in John Deere. Well, I began teaching as the in-house coordinator and facilitator and provider of English training for initially about 40 managers and technical personnel, engineers. But by the end of the year, by the end of 1977, 11 months later, I had 150 students. And to accommodate those 150 students, I had 12 teachers helping me full-time or part-time. And so it was a big project. And the project was, as I said before the break, was to dotar de inglés a una empresa entera. Pasarle de monolingüe a bilingüe. That was my objective, and I achieved it 70% in the first 2 years. But I needed teachers. So I found teachers, and my criteria for finding teachers was quality, top quality, outstanding teachers. And it wasn't difficult because I only needed 12. And I remembered teachers from my time in Berlitz and in the nuclear plant and my time in Intercom on Calle Mayor. And so I stole, digamos, the very best teachers they had, but I offered them double. I offered them double the pay. And so they came very, very happily. And it wasn't difficult to transform John Deere into a bilingual company, semi-bilingual company. I would say the average age of the students was about 40. The average level in the company was a functional manager. I mean, we had the production manager, well, the factory manager, the product engineering manager, the process engineering manager, the spare parts, repuestos, the spare parts manager, the service manager, and then many of their subordinates, and the financial manager, and the accounting manager, everybody, and the safety and security manager, the human resources manager, and many, many others, and very interesting people, very, very interesting people, yes. In every company, in every major company where I have taught, including the nuclear plant in Zorita, I encountered very interesting people, because it's interesting that when you teach somebody English, that person is at a disadvantage. Me, as a teacher, I speak English perfectly, but my students don't. And my students feel vulnerables, because they are trying to speak and trying to express themselves in a language in which they don't feel confident. And so they feel vulnerable. And they reveal certain elements of their personality and character that normally they don't reveal when speaking Spanish because they dominate or control the communication situation. But in English, they don't. And so me, as an English teacher, I have always been able to see a different side of the character of my students, many of whom are very, very important people. I've given class to ministers of the government. I've given class to chairmen, presidents of companies, and general managers, CEOs, very top-class people. But when they're speaking in English, they feel insecure a little bit. They feel vulnerable, and they open up. And I'm able to see parts of their personality that perhaps not even their spouse, ni siquiera su cónyuge me. And so it opens up a very interesting dialogue and connection between the student and the teacher. And it was interesting, at that time, in the spring of 1977, I was 25. And the average age of my students was 40. The same that happened in the nuclear plant before. But I was able to handle it very, very well. And I enjoyed it very much because the people in John Deere, these people were working in agriculture and industry. Agriculture because half of the company or one-third of the company was devoted to selling the tractors and servicing the tractors and providing spare parts for the tractors and the transportation for the tractors. So they were basically dealing with farmers and people out in the country, people in Ellín, people in Albacete, people in Valdepeñas, people in Antequera, people in Zamora, people in Toro, people in Vitigudino, or you see all over, people in Zafra. And so I was teaching people who were intimately connected to the country, el campo. and to rural Spain, not urban Spain. That was maybe 40% of all of my students. 60%, another 50% of my students were in the factory, and they were not directly connected to the farmers or to the country or to Albacete or Zamora or Ellín, no. These were engineers for designing tractors and designing the manufacturing process, the incoming inspection of raw materials, and the machining of these materials, the machining of parts and components. Machining is el mecanizado, y luego el montaje, and then the assembly. Machining and assembly. So these were engineers. They were not farmers or people connected or people with an understanding of the needs of a farmer. These were tough, rough, tough engineers with dirt under their fingernails. And it was so they were a very different type of person. So 40% were connected to the country. 50% of my students were connected intimately to manufacturing. And the other 10% were finance. The pretty boys. Yes, they were more sophisticated, more refined, because they were working with numbers and working with cash, with investments. And finally, one student who was a lawyer. A lawyer, the legal counsel, el asesor jurídico. Who doesn't count. It's different. Okay, he's a lawyer. So it's fascinating going out every day. And I went every day, as I said, by bus out there. And then on certain days when I had a new teacher starting, I took the teacher out by bus in the morning, going out to Getafe. And at that time, in 1977, as I said, that was perhaps the most important year and maybe the messiest year. Messy means desordenado or complicado, perhaps complicated. During the transition, the political transition, that was the year in which Adolfo Suárez decided to legalize the Communist Party. I think he did it in Semana Santa. I can't remember when. And so there was a lot of unrest. There was a lot of instability. There were a lot of strikes. The trade unions were very busy claiming their rights and striking. ETA was and Grapo, these two terrorist organizations, were very busy. I think in 1977, up to 80 people were killed in terrorist activities, bombings and shootings and things. The inflation in 1977, I believe, was around 18%. I'm not sure. I'm going to find out. In Spain. But people in general were optimistic despite these problems. People were optimistic. Yes, let me ask ChatGPT. ChatGPT. Let me try again. Hold on. ChatGPT. All right. What was the inflation rate in Spain in 1977? All right, let's find out what it was. The inflation rate in 25%. Ugh, that was a lot. 25%. In 1977, Spain experienced a significant inflation rate, with the consumer price index increasing by approximately 24.54% over the year. Okay. I mean, I know the reasons for this. I'm not going to talk economics now. The consumer price index, CPI, Aquí se dice IPC, índice de precios al consumo, IPC. En inglés al revés, CPI, Consumer Price Index, con X, index. 26%. Excuse me, 25%. So the inflation was very high. Yes. How many people were killed by ETA and Grapo in Spain in 1977? I don't know if I can get this information, but I can give you an idea. Let's see. Let's see. In all, there were fewer than I said. 22. Grapo caused 11 deaths, and ETA was responsible for another 11. So 22 people died. But you see, but despite the high inflation, despite the stagnation of the Spanish economy, despite the activities of ETA and Grapo, the people in general were optimistic. People were optimistic because Spain was entering a new period, a new future of democracy. And so the people were optimistic about this. I'll be back with more after this break.
¿Tienes tú o un familiar tuyo problemas con el alcohol, las drogas, el juego u otro comportamiento adictivo? En la Fundación Recal podemos ayudaros. Primera cita y evaluación gratuita. Llama al 91 392 8251 y nuestro equipo médico y terapéutico te asesorará. También puedes consultar en nuestra página web fundacionrecal.org. Solo no puedes, pero juntos podemos.
Revive la emoción de la competición en Onda Madrid, donde cada domingo se apagan las luces del semáforo para trasladarnos todo lo sucedido en el Mundial de Fórmula 1.
MotoGP, rallies y Mundo Motorsport. La mejor fórmula para estar al tanto de todas las carreras, la previa, entrevistas y las curiosidades.
Una cita ineludible para amantes de la competición, donde periodistas, ingenieros y pilotos analizan en un mismo box toda la actualidad.
Te esperamos cada domingo de 12 a 2 de la madrugada con Juanma Fernández y todo su equipo.
Para que esté siempre en la pole position de la información del motor de competición.
Aquí, en Onda Madrid.
Restaurante J, cocina vasca, un referente de buena mesa en Chamberí, con la sencillez y honestidad de la cocina de siempre, donde comer bien, sin tontunas, con familia, amigos, tu cuadrilla, verduras, guisos de temporada y pescados salvajes al centro de la mesa. Restaurante J, una cocina para siempre, a 50 metros de la Glorieta de Bilbao. Reserva y disfruta.
101.3 y 106 FM, Onda Madrid.
Hello and welcome back. All right, we're back for our last segment. Are you with me? Okay, let's continue. I was talking about 1977, an important year in my life. Yes, for many reasons. Wow. Reason number one, it was the first full year of the transition. Full year of the transition after the referendum for political reform in December 1976. Number one. Number two, I started my company, Vaughan Systems. Vaughan Systems. I started my company. I started with one client, John Deere, the tractor maker, in February 1977. Both starting my company, and I took advantage of John Deere as a permanent client to formalize my activity into a sociedad limitada. And so I did that. Bueno, sociedad anónima al principio. Then I switched to limitada. And then another reason that was a very important year is because I got married in 1977. But at the end of the year, I got married on December 30th. Yes, which is a very strange period of the year in Spain for people to get married. But me, I have always done things the opposite of the rest of the people. Always. Yeah, it's strange. I always go against the current. Siempre nado contra corriente. I always, if people say green, I say blue. If people say white, I say black. I don't know why, all my life, even when I was little, as far back as I can remember, when somebody flips a coin and say heads or tails, I always say tails. And I've noticed that 95% of the people say heads. Heads. You know, when you flip a coin, is tirar una moneda al aire. Cara o cruz, cara o cruz. 95% of the people say cara. Yo siempre cruz. I don't know why head. We say, in English, we say cabezas o colas. Heads or tails. O rabos. Heads or tails. And I've always said tails. I remember in 1960 when John Kennedy and Richard Nixon were running for president during the campaign, all of my family, everybody in my family, were supporting Richard Nixon. Everybody in Houston, Texas, where I was living, were supporting Richard Nixon, and I decided to support Kennedy. Always against the grain. Se dice mucho against the grain. Grain como grano, pero grano es como the grain of wood. Contra la, I can't remember. How do you say to go against the grain in Spanish? To go against the grain. Ir contra corriente. Okay. But, yes, how do you say grain as it appears in wood? All right, in madera. I can't remember how you say that. La veta. Ir contra, o sea, la veta recta, contra veta. That's crossing the grain. Okay, la veta de la madera. And to go against the grain. Escrito grain, always in my life. And so getting married in December, the next to last day of the year, December 30th, 1977, we got married. But when I started teaching full time in John Deere in February 1977, I had not asked my wife out. But during February, we went on our first date, let's say, nuestra primera cita. So between the first date and our marriage, 11 months passed, or 10 and a half months. Yes. Now, my wife's name is Fernanda, and, Maria Fernanda, and She was the evening receptionist in Intercom Idiomas, where I had taught. So I had known her for a year. I had known her for about 14 or 15 months. I met her in November 1975. But I didn't ask her out until February 1977. Fijaos la expresión to ask somebody out. Literalmente preguntar a alguien fuera. Ask somebody out. Eso es pedir que alguien salga contigo. O sea, ¿quieres salir al cine esta noche? Okay. But our first date was not to go to a movie. I invited her to go to Segovia to have lunch in Casa Candido. All right. And so we went to Segovia and we had lunch in Casa Candido. And of course, at that time, Casa Candido was very, very famous. And I remember I ordered, among other things, among the first courses I ordered, how do you say, chorizo frito? No, but similar. All right. And I have a very high threshold for heat. I have a very high threshold for heat. Threshold es umbral, tengo un altísimo umbral para lo que quema. No me, nada, me, nada. La comida que quemo mucho no me quema. And so I ordered this chorizo in, I don't know how to say it, frito, but it was very, very hot, but not for me. I said, try it, it's good. And she burned her mouth on the first date. That was a, she still remembers that from the first date. But then we started going out together, and during 1977, I took her to London for Holy Week, Semana Santa. I took her to London for Holy Week or Easter. There are two words for Semana Santa, Easter or Holy Week. Holy Week is more Catholic, Easter is more Protestant, perhaps. And then in October, I asked her to if she would like to get married. And she said yes, and we got married in December. That's quick compared in Spain at that time, los noviazgos. Un noviazgo formal, ya con anillo de prometido, prometida, etc., that normally lasts 2 years, 4 years, 7 years. For me, 2 months. Once I make a decision, I want to carry it out. I want quick results, etc. And so we went out together. So we went steady. To go steady means exclusive, contrato en exclusivo. we were going out together in March, April, May, June, July, August, September, and October in Calle Princesa in a pub that doesn't exist anymore, having dos cafés irlandesas, two Irish coffees. And I said, well, you know, we could get married. And she said, yeah. I said, well, why not? When? She said, well, whenever. I said, well, how about December? And so we can take our honeymoon during the Christmas break. Honeymoon is luna de miel, o viaje de novios. We can take our honeymoon during the Christmas break. So let's get married in December. And she said, yes. All right. My wife is Madrileña. She was born in Madrid and grew up in Madrid in Barrio La Concepción. And she's an interesting background. Her paternal grandfather, that means her father's father, was the consul español in Lisboa, in Portugal, for 30 years or 35 years. And her father grew up in Lisbon, but her father was Spanish and Portuguese. And the father spoke perfect Spanish, perfect Portuguese, perfect German, perfect French, and very good English, because he was also a high-level, he worked in the Viajes Meliá as a high-level tour guide going to Russia, to Japan, very important tours. And the mother, her paternal grandmother, her father's mother, was from Galicia. Y era un Torres Pardo, era con Marquesa or something, I can't know. And then from the other side of the family, her grandfather was from Avila, Sotillo Ladrada. And her grandmother was from Valle del Tabladillo, which is a tiny village very near Sepúlveda in Segovia, Segoviana. It was an interesting, and so she was part abulense, part segoviana, part gallega, and part, it's interesting, part sevillana y Africa subsahariana, because there was some African blood from Cuba, okay, after the Spanish-American War. And so that's my wife. And so that was, 1977 was a very important year for me in so many ways. I established during that year the most important element for the success of my company. And that element is the quality of the teacher. It's not that when people say, uy, el método Bowen es famoso, o todo el mundo conoce el método Bowen. No, el método Bowen no es nada. Es bueno. Es un buen hardware. Lo que diferencia el método Bowen es la calidad del profesor. Yes, tú puedes robar mi método, pero si no robas mis profes, tienes un buen hardware sin el software adecuado. It's very simple. And so, the teacher is everything. Si el profe mola, Lope de Vega mola. Si el profe mola, el álgebra de repente mola. It's always the teacher. If the teacher is attractive, the subject is attractive. It always depends on the teacher. It doesn't depend on the textbook, nor on the electronic blackboard, nor with tablets in cada pupitre. No. It all depends on the personal and professional qualities of the teacher. And an outstanding teacher changes the learning curve completely. And I knew that from my experience in the nuclear plant in Zorita, and in my year and 4 months working in Intercom. I knew it's always the quality of the person. It's not anything else. I mean, this is always the case in everything. It's the quality of the person. The person changes things. Methods don't change things, but people create the methods and apply the methods and supervise and monitor the methods that can change the world. Pablo de Tarso, the Apostle Paul, de haber sido budista y no cristiano, it's very likely that Western civilization would be not Greco-Roman Christian, but Greco-Roman Buddhist. If the Apostle Paul had been Buddhist, that's the power of the person. If Paul, the Apostle Paul, had died on the way to Ephesus on his first trip to the Greek world, Christianity probably would not have succeeded. And it would be perhaps two paragraphs in El Espacio or in the Encyclopedia Britannica about an attempt to change Judaism. That's the power of the person. And that's the power of my success in my company, is the quality of the teacher. The quality of the teacher. And I used the 2 years, 1977, 78, and 79. From 1977 to 1979, those 2 years, I verified and confirmed these convictions in John Deere, in Getafe, in the south of the province of Madrid. And with this, I have to say goodbye once again. It's been a real pleasure for this Sunday. I wish you the best for the coming week. Good luck this week, and I'll see you again. When? Next Sunday. Bye-bye.